Good morning, everybody. Thanks so much for coming out. So today I'm going to be talking about a study that we did testing the effects of clear cutting forests on mineral soil carbon storage. If you've been going to any of the forest and rangeland talks, there's been a lot of enthusiasm for the organic layer, but here we're going to go a little bit deeper. And in the northeastern U.S., under hardwood forests, we typically have spodosols. So we're talking about spodosols for the most part. And the reason why we're interested in mineral soils there is because in northeastern hardwood forests, mineral soils account for up to 50% of total ecosystem carbon storage. So they're very important for the picture of carbon balance. And also, if you look at the U.S., the northeastern U.S., this is a mineral soil map, has quite high stores of mineral soil C. So we feel that it's an important thing to look at there in particular. Also, in our region, the forestry industry is a multi-billion dollar industry, and it's poised to grow as we're looking for ways to switch fuels from oil to more sustainable products. But we are curious about the carbon balance of the entire process, including its effect on soil. And also, we've been hearing a lot about shifting paradigms from this expectation and assumption that deeper soil carbon is somehow inherently recalcitrant or not sensitive to disturbances at the soil surface. But there have been lots of papers coming out more recently talking about how big environmental impacts can influence mineral soil carbon storage. So here we have an intact forest, and typically undisturbed forests are in steady state with carbon flux roughly equaling carbon flux in equaling carbon flux out. But when we cut down a forest, we make some pretty drastic changes to this ecosystem. So carbon inputs to soil decrease because you're removing the above ground biomass. Soil temperatures increase without the shade of the canopy. Evapotranspiration increases, and there's physical disturbance such as compaction or churning of the soil surface. And so these are just a few, but as we can see and maybe think about total ecosystem carbon cycling, we're really changing a lot of these vectors, and we may expect that carbon could be lost. And furthermore, there have been some studies that have shown that carbon in mineral soil is affected by harvest. So here we have a chronosequence study in Nova Scotia where they saw a gradual loss of carbon for up to 3 decades after harvest, and then it recovered. And similarly, this is a study from the Eastern Tibetan Plateau, and they also saw a gradual decline in soil lasting up to 2 decades. And I'd be remiss not to mention the famous Covington curve from the 70s, and he was really the first person to discover this trend, and this was actually in organic soil, but basically after cutting a forest, you have this decline in organic mass, and then it recovers. And since then, this has been challenged by many people because the findings have not been replicated in some cases, but in the mineral soil, where it's slightly less variable, we've recently seen very similar results. So in our study, we basically had 2 objectives. Our first was to compare places that had been cut in the past to places that were undisturbed or old growth. And to do that, and we hypothesized that places that hadn't been disturbed would have more soil carbon to a depth of 60 centimeters. So we compared and grouped places that were harvested in the last 100 years to forests that are older than 100 years. And secondly, we were curious about the trend in soil carbon storage over time. We hypothesized that there would be a gradual change and then recovery that could last decades, similar to in previous studies. And for this part of the study, we used an information theoretic approach to construct a mixed effects model. And the study area, so where in the region we took the samples, was a random effect, and direct effects included clay content, sand age, and elevation. So we tested the effects of other variables that are known to influence carbon storage. And for this part of the study, age was treated as a continuous variable instead of these 2 groups of cut and uncut. So in our chronosequence study design, this relies on selecting forest stands that have similar characteristics aside from the treatment of time since harvest. So we tried to minimize other treatment effects. We selected 7 study areas throughout the northeastern U.S. And in total, we had 59 pooled deep soil cores from 20 forest stands, and the pooled soil cores were from three separate cores that we would take in each location. So this is a map of our study areas. We have the Bartlett Experimental Forest and the Harvard Forest, which many people have probably heard about. And in each location, we sampled between one stand and five stands. So for our old growth sites, like Gifford Woods and the Bull RNA, those were just one single undisturbed stand that we went to. And then all the other locations had about 3 to 5 stands that we would study. And many of them also had some undisturbed forest. So these are just some pictures. We used a gas-powered auger to extract cores to 60 centimeters and used a diamond-tipped drill bit to kind of cut through the granite rock. And we sampled in 10-centimeter increments in order to not compact the soil and also to look at the effect of harvest on the different depth increments. And this just is to quickly show that our sites were relatively similar. So they were all at relatively low elevation. We were dealing mostly with photosols, except for Harvard Forest, which is the most southern site, was an insectosol and was also warmer, so most of the soils were frigid temperature regime, and they were all on well-drained sites. And these are also the ages of the stands that we sampled in each location. So on to the results. So in soil carbon concentration, which is on the x-axis and depth on the y here, we saw a trend that greater than 100-year-old forests had higher soil carbon concentrations than cut forests at every depth increment. And similar for the carbon pools, the older forests had higher carbon stocks compared to harvested pools, but the variation in this made it insignificant. Looking at the carbon pools by depth, we see here that there is this trend again for the greater than 100-year-old forests to have higher carbon pools, and as you go deeper, the change becomes larger, or the difference in percent is larger. So this is consistent with other studies that have found impacts on logging and the deeper horizons of spodosols. And it's been hypothesized that this is because of the very nature of spodosols, which has organic acids moving throughout the soil profile, and a disturbance causes more of these organic acids to be mobilized, which then could contribute to things like a priming effect. So this is consistent with other studies. And looking at some of the chemistry, we looked at the relationship between CN ratios and soil organic matter, and in harvested forests, there was a significant positive relationship between these variables. And we expected in the older forests that there should be no relationship, because typically these things are in steady state, but we had a weak negative relationship. But we can see that there's some differences going on here. And basically, we attributed this to either a nitrogen dilution effect, where the regrowing forests are having to take up nitrogen, so carbon may be being added back into the soil profile through primary production, but nitrogen is needed to grow that second growth forest. And this hypothesis is being tested by several others in the Northeast, because basically the nitrogen budgets don't work out for second growth forests, and we're thinking that the source of the nitrogen must be from the mineral soil. So looking at forest harvest over time, so basically we took out the old growth forests here because many of them don't have an age that we can assign. So we used only our forest stands that we know the definite age of. And time after harvest was the best predictor of soil carbon storage across the Northeast. We tested this against clay and elevation and combinations of those, and the best model using AICC rejection criteria was using time after harvest. And this is a random slopes or a random intercept model where the intercept can move for the study area, which the study area was our random effect. And so each study has its own intercept but the same slope. And so what we found is a significant negative relationship between time after harvest and mineral soil. And the slope of this relationship, which is the same for all sites, is 0.4 megagrams per hectare per year of carbon loss, which is roughly equal to about 10% of heterotrophic respiration in northeastern hardwood forests. So we feel like this is kind of a validation of that magnitude of change, that we think that's probably plausible to have a 10% loss. And also, it was interesting because that's a relatively small percentage and might be difficult to pick up if you were measuring something like respirations in real time. But over many decades, this loss becomes evident. So in conclusion, there was a trend for soil carbon pools and concentrations to be higher in greater than 100-year-old forests than cut forests. However, the differences were not significant. Time since harvest outperformed other variables in predicting soil carbon pools across sites. We measured a gradual significant decline in soil carbon in the century after forest harvest. And one thing that I wanted to point out is that this study was kind of a preliminary study, and we didn't try to test any mechanisms of what could cause changes, but obviously the mechanism that could cause any loss that would last for decades is a really important part of this equation, and greater sampling efforts across the region would be needed to kind of make up for the fact that soil carbon is quite variable across. So thank you very much.
Does anyone have any questions?
Questions?
Yes. When you present results showing the decline with forest age, is that composite over the whole mineral soil, or is that for specific?
It's the full, it's the 0 to 60 centimeters, the full profile of a mineral.
Okay, so that includes the pH horizon, and that includes the organic rich layer on the soil.
No, it's not the organic layer.
So not the forest floor, but do you have...
In a lot of these spodosols, so this could get really, we could talk about this for a while, but at Bartlett Forest, there's no A horizon. In several places, there wasn't an A, but in New York, the A layers tend to be really thick, and that presented an issue when field sampling, determining when it actually turned from organic to mineral soil, because technically it's just a percentage cutoff, which you can't measure in the field. So we did have to take some cores out of the study that proved to be, like we basically started counting the mineral soil too early.
Is there any reason for this? And the question, the second question is, did the insecticides behave differently to the spodosols in terms of the losses of the different soil compartments?
So the first question, so the mechanisms that were proposed, one of them is that root decay can occur for up to 70 years after cutting forest. So if there is a priming effect of labile carbon being put into the system, which then allows for the breakdown of recalcitrant carbon, that could be one source of labile carbon that lasts for a long time. But it is kind of perplexing that it would last for so long. But also this stand that we removed that would have been adding carbon for many decades could contribute, kind of a lag effect, basically. And at Harvard Forest, the most southern site, we actually kind of saw a decrease and then an increase again at our oldest stand. So we were thinking that perhaps it was on recovering by that point, and perhaps this process was accelerated. And there, I did add this one slide just to kind of, as a visual aid, we just did a modeling exercise to talk about how these stands would recover, because obviously they're not going to continue decreasing forever. So similar to kind of what Covington and others found, that there's this increase then.
And also the largest losses in the
No, that was just for the spodosols. Anyone else?
I'll ask your question.
Yeah.
Do you think it's worthwhile to worry about separating the mineral from the organic layers?
Do you mean to measure the mineral at all or to at them separately?
Well, no, you can measure everything, but separate it and do the comparison only on the mineral.
On the mineral?
I think that's
one of the reasons we did this is because the organic horizon has been studied so much already.
Right.
And it's also extremely variable. I don't know if you were at some of the talks yesterday that just showed in a 100 meter square area how it can vary by hundreds of centimeters in some cases. So it seems like looking at the mineral soil in this case, especially when comparing sands that have these treatments that may have done 50 years ago, is just a little more consistent than looking at the organic horizon.
Thank you, Shel.
Thank you.